Good evening, and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm Ayan Bior in Washington. Here are some of the stories we're covering today, Thursday, October 5th, 2017. Deadly fighting in Wat continues 4 days after it began, and the ICRC says it cannot get access to the wounded.
We cannot be able to land an aeroplane in a place where there is fighting. Us, ourselves, it's against our rules to put our people in harm's way.
And a new report on crime in Juba says neighbors think security forces are not doing enough to protect people and their property.
They said the forces that were patrolling the town, especially at night, were mainly on the main roads, on the highways, and they were not reaching deep into the residential areas.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. The International Committee of the Red Cross, or ICRC, is expressing concern about the fate of the dozens of wounded in the fighting around Wat. Fighting between government forces and rebels loyal to Riek Machar erupted on Sunday. An ICRC spokesman says his team earlier evacuated more than 20 injured soldiers and civilians to Akobo and Juba for treatment. Dimo Silva Aurelio reports for VOA from Juba.
The International Committee of the Red Cross says the fighting that began 4 days ago continues in Bechi State's area of Wat. ICRC spokesman Robin Waudo released a statement today accusing the warring parties of blocking the evacuation of wounded soldiers in the latest round of fighting. Waudo says warring parties must stop fighting so the ICRC can airlift wounded soldiers out of the area.
It has not ceased completely, and of course, we cannot be able to land an aeroplane in a place where there is fighting. Us, ourselves, it's against our rules to put our people in harm's way. We need to be able to have an agreement with all parties to the conflict in order for us to go in safely, remove the wounded and take them for treatment.
The ICRC was able to evacuate 22 people who were wounded since the fighting broke out on Sunday. Waudo says government soldiers and rebels loyal to Riek Machar are blocking ICRC from accessing the area.
As we sit right now, the negotiation is continuing. We've got contact with all sides, as I mentioned, not only with one side, but we would not like to risk going in without getting the security guarantees that we need. And this is why also we are asking the parties to the conflict that they respect and protect the rights of the wounded people to get medical assistance.
Waudo would not disclose the number of wounded from both sides trapped in Wat. SPLA military spokesman Brigadier General Lul Roy Kong says it is plain to see that the rebels are denying access to Wat.
ICRC should have been courageous enough and bold to call a spade instead of making a generalized statement calling on the parties to give them access to the wounded. We did our part of the agreement. We honored it by allowing ICRC to collect the wounded from the rebel side, from Lankan to Akobo. But when it came to our turn, they violated the agreement and started shelling the ICRC aircraft, the Adwata runway. They fired 3 mortar rounds, mortar shells, which landed and exploded very close to the airplane. And as a result, the operation was aborted.
Colonel Lam Paul Gabriel, the deputy spokesman of the SPLA-IO, says since the fighting continues, the area is not safe for any humanitarian organization.
They are wounded. We have several wounded on our side, even on the government side. We have not stopped them from being evacuated. But unfortunately, you know, we are in control of the airstrip and we cut off the soldiers from the airstrip. So if they want to bring their people to the airstrip, they are fighting us. So in the proper airstrip, you will fire at the plane that is landing there. So it is much riskier at the moment for any agency.
4 soldiers were killed on Sunday when fighting between government forces and rebel fighters loyal to former first vice president Riek Machar first began in Wat. The UN mission in South Sudan confirmed reports of fighting in Wat. Both sides are still claiming they control Wat village. For VOA News, I am Dimo Silva Aurelio in Juba.
Some residents of Juba Town are calling on security forces to do more to end criminal activity in the capital, including killings and armed robberies. A new report by the local NGO South Sudanese Network for Democracy and Elections, or SUNDE, says security agencies are not doing enough to fight rampant crime in Juba neighborhoods. Waki Simon Wudu has the story for VOA from Juba.
SUNDE Executive Director Rajab Muhandis presented 16 recommendations to the South Sudan Minister of Interior during a workshop today that was attended by representatives from organized forces, some Juba residents and activists. SUNDE recommends establishing a line of communication to inform citizens on measures taken by security personnel and guarantees that safety and security will improve in Juba. Muhandis says residents are complaining about the lack of responses from the security forces during distress calls.
They said the forces that were patrolling the town, especially at night, were mainly on the main roads, on the highways, and they were not reaching deep into the residential areas. And this was a kind of living vacuum, security vacuum in the residential areas that could be exploited by criminal elements to rob citizens and intimidate them or harass them, especially at night.
Muhandis says residents want police, not security forces, to answer distress calls. The SUNDE report, which followed a survey taken in much of Juba's most crime-ridden neighborhoods, says authorities should investigate the unlawful and unacceptable behavior of some traffic police officers intimidating drivers on the streets of Juba. Serikata neighborhood resident Peter Garangdeng says he and his family used to feel they were at the mercy of criminals at night.
As from last year, we have been facing some security threats. My wife happened to be one of the wives that is running small businesses. So that is in Chirkat. She had a saloon. In December, we bought a lot of stocks for the Christmas preparations, as part of Christmas preparations. Same day we brought the stock from Kampala. Thieves came at night, then broke into the saloons. They took everything, including the chairs that were there. I gave the report to the police, and the police tried their level best, but to no avail. They could not get the stocks. So I can simply say that security has improved.
A Gurei neighborhood resident who goes by only her first name, Sony, for fear of retribution from security forces, says security officers continue to harass residents at night.
The security challenges that we face in Gurei, more especially in Lemungaba, these soldiers who are deployed on the road, patrolling the road, making checking from 5 to 6, 6, 7, 8, something like that. So from that time, somebody is not feeling safe to go to those locations. If you want to even take a border, they refuse because there are incidents where their licenses are taken, more especially with the current situation where they have declared that all the licenses have to be renewed to SSD, something like that. That has really affected us so much.
Interior Minister Michael Chanjek admits there are areas in the security sector government has not done much, and he says his office is ready to take action against the errant forces.
I also urge our people, the public, to positively engage with our security officers, especially those we have deployed in the areas or in the quarters, so that to give them necessary information. Because by giving them the necessary information, it will help the security forces to immediately react to any action that need to be that the criminals want to take. It will also be a protective measure that once we have the information necessary, we will immediately also arrest and prosecute those criminals.
The South Sudan Inspector General of Police, General Said Chiwul, says his office has made several arrests, including some officers in the organized forces. He refused to give the exact number. For VOA News, I'm Waki Simon Wudu in Juba.
Today is International Teachers' Day, and some teachers in South Sudan's capital say even though working conditions are bad, they are determined to continue teaching. Teachers in Juba say they love their profession because they get to prepare South Sudan's next generation for higher learning. Tito Justin has more for VOA from Juba.
In South Sudan, most primary teachers are paid between £380 and £1,000 per month, which is equivalent to $7. Secondary school teachers receive between 1,000 to 1,300 South Sudanese pounds, or about $10 per month. Alaro Cyprus has been teaching for 11 years. Cyprus started as a primary teacher and is now a secondary school teacher at Rainbow Senior Secondary School. Cyprus says he will continue teaching because he believes the future of South Sudan depends on the young generation in his school and others across the country.
Though there was a little incentives that we are so far getting, delayed salaries which will come after maybe 5 months or 2 months, then these problems we are persevering because we are the indigenous of the country and we don't have any way to go out. If we leave teaching, then we don't have a future of this country.
Cyprus says he wants to continue teaching because education is key to success. He says presidents, ministers, and doctors were all taught by teachers like him, so he will go on teaching despite the difficult conditions in South Sudan. Timon Lodidi Korea has been teaching agriculture at Rainbow Senior Secondary School for the last 7 years. Korea says teachers who are not paid on time should look for other sources of income, as he does with his farm.
I have specialized in agriculture. Apart from teaching, I have my field at home. I have some goats, some sheep. I'm rearing them.
Jogan Noel teaches in Rajab Model Nasir and Primary School. He has been teaching at Rajab since 2012. Noel says South Sudan has already lost one generation to war. He says he wants to help this generation get on right the path to success.
I've seen the suffering of the people in South Sudan. The standard of education is completely very low, and indeed I have knew the teachers are not motivated. But what really motivates me to be a teacher, even if I'm not all that being properly motivated, is that the future of the South Sudanese depends on the teachers.
Rejoice William is the head teacher at Rajab Model Nasir and Primary School. William says teaching is a commitment to the next generation. She says she loves teaching despite her meager salary.
Without teaching, I think we will not gain any work. We'll just remain like laborers and even some of the armies. But for teaching, we like it because we want to develop our country and we want to give knowledge to our children, to our people, to become well off in future. I think it is a spiritual work.
South Sudan's illiteracy rate is one of the worst in the world, standing at 73% according to education officials. Teachers in South Sudan's government-run secondary and primary schools have gone on strike several times after not getting paid for months on end. South Sudan's fiscal year 2017 to 2018 budget allocates only 4% for education activities across the country. For VOA News, I am Tito Justin in Juba.
On this World's Teachers Day, the teachers' strike in Cameroon's two English-speaking regions is coming up on 11 months with no end in sight. Though the government tells VOA that talks are ongoing, Moki Edwin Kinzika reports from Yaoundé.
Thousands of teachers celebrated World Teachers' Day Thursday in Cameroon's capital. 26-year-old Ernestine Tabe left her school in the English-speaking town of Kumba last month to look for a job in Yaoundé. She had been without salary for 5 months due to the ongoing strike.
So I decided to come here in order to get myself involved in teaching so that the zeal in me won't die down, because as a teacher, you're always eager to teach others to know.
Most of the schools were sealed in Cameroon's two Anglophone regions, the North West and South West, last November, when lawyers and teachers went on strike, demanding reforms to address what they describe as the overbearing use of French in the bilingual country.
You take a Francophone teacher and send to the Anglophone side of the country, and an Anglophone teacher to the Francophone part of the country going to be teaching French instead of the subject that he was trained for. What do you think? That person cannot perform. That is bad fed.
Gideon Tanda is a leader of one of the teachers' trade unions that called the strike.
Government is not listening, and it's so deplorable now that we've had a lot of killings. People are on the run. Others are nowhere to be found, just missing. I feel terribly bad as a teacher that at this point in time, people have to miss classes for a whole year, and they are about to miss another year.
Anglophone separatist groups joined the movement, demanding the English-speaking regions form a new state they call Ambazonia. Tens of thousands of people took to the streets in the regions earlier this week to support the independence calls. Security forces squashed the demonstrators, killing at least 17 people, according to Amnesty International. VOA spoke to Teachers Association of Cameroon leader Valentine Tame by phone from the northwestern town of Bamenda.
We're asking the teachers to be redeployed into classrooms where their operational language permits them to operate. We're asking for exams of Francophone orientation be taken out of the English-speaking subsystem of education. We ask for the creation of a polytechnic to take care of Anglophone children.
Since the strike began, the government says it has recruited 1,000 English-speaking teachers, paid subsidies to private schools, and some jailed leaders of teachers' unions have been freed. The governor of the Southwest region, Bernard Okalia-Bilai, is urging teachers to return to their classrooms.
Les recommandations du gouvernement semblent avoir été comprises.
He says the state is here to guarantee their security. He says officials will continue to talk to address the teachers' grievances throughout the year. Schools in the two Anglophone regions that have defied the call to strike have been targeted by arson attacks. Militant separatist groups are believed to be responsible, and some parents say it is not safe to send their children back to school. The government estimates just 20% of students expected in the English-speaking regions have shown up for class since the school year began in September. Moki Edwin Kinzika for VOA News, Yaoundé.
You're tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Who was the African winner of the 2017 coveted Nansen Refugee Award? Find out when we return.
For in-depth news and analysis on events in South Sudan, tune in to South Sudan in Focus, Monday through Friday from 1630 to 1700 UTC. We are also on the web at www.voanews.com/South Sudan or download our podcast on iTunes. That's South Sudan in Focus on VOA Africa.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
what do you do to help your community?
What I do to help my community is just to teach my young brothers and sisters in the same community as me. And again, I participate in different activities which can improve on people's lives in my community. I think that's all.
When there is a community walk, I go out and participate. We clean the gutters and clear the bushes around.
So I do give psychosocial support to my people in the community, especially those who have some disability. So I do, I'm just a psychosocial support giver.
I just participate in those public works like Umuganda and those entertaining activities. Since I know how to speak Chinese, I help my community members to study Chinese.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus. The winner of this year's prestigious Nansen Refugee Award sees hope in bringing education to the children of Boko Haram, the militant group in northeastern Nigeria that opposes Western education. Lisa Schlein in Geneva reports on Nigerian educator Zana Mustafa's mission to provide a better future through education for the children displaced by the Boko Haram insurgency.
Zana Mustafa sees his role as that of an umpire, arbitrating between competing dangerous forces. As a lawyer, he is well suited for this role and has successfully mediated between the Nigerian government and Boko Haram for the release of 103 girls held hostage, including 82 of the so-called Chibok girls. As an educator who has admitted the children of Boko Haram widows into his school, he has gained the trust of this militant group. The irony of teaching the children of Boko Haram insurgents who proclaim Western education is forbidden is not lost on him. Despite the group's brutality, he assures VOA Boko Haram is concerned about the welfare of its children.
So you took the children of Boko Haram?
Yes.
Into your school?
Into my school.
So this was done with their complicity?
Not even with their complicity. That was a period when nobody can even go to their own place. So I now accommodated them and called the widows of those Boko Haram and said, well, let us come and find a way, something that will say, this is what we can do.
Mustafa says he has accommodated Boko Haram's religious precepts by agreeing to girls wearing the hijab and knee-length dresses and by asking them to spell out what they wanted for their children.
You want to have futures for these children. How do we find one? They said, we should teach them Quran. I said, yes, we accepted Quran would be one. And then English, maths. I didn't introduce anything to them. I made them to say it, that they wanted.
Mustafa opened a school in Maiduguri, Nigeria, for displaced and orphaned children in 2007, 2 years before the insurgency began. These children now have completed secondary school and are preparing to go to university. Zana Mustafa sees his classrooms as a sign of the reconciliation he hopes to achieve in this war-torn region. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Liberian women have been internationally recognized for their peaceful activism that helped bring an end to 14 years of civil war. However, peace has not brought gender parity. Despite Liberia having the continent's first female head of state, women remain underrepresented in elected office. As Liberia heads to nationwide polls October 10th, more women than ever are on the ballot demanding a change. Monique John reports for VOA from Monrovia.
Patricia Tiki Diwani is among 162 women running for office in Liberia, a record high. Diwani is seeking a seat in the House of Representatives.
No, I don't have a degree for college, no. I'm a market woman and I'm a high school graduate.
Women currently hold just 9 of the 73 seats in Liberia's House of Representatives.
The men are fail us. So we the women, this time around, we want to do better than the men.
The gender imbalance is particularly glaring, considering that Liberia has been led by Africa's first female president, Ellen Johnson Sirleaf, for the past 12 years.
Politics is it's scary for most women. You need a lot of money if you're going to run for office, and it could be a little intimidating at times. There has been a lot of intimidation through the process, a lot of attacks, a lot of manipulation, but I'm strong. I'm a strong woman. I stand for what I believe in.
Magdela Cooper is the only woman running for president this year. She faces 19 male challengers. 6 women are on the ballot as vice presidential candidates, including Audrey and Smith Forbes.
I want to say thanks to our president, Her Excellency Ellen Johnson Sirleaf, for paving the way for women to build confidence, you know, in their role and see the importance of their role in society. Women issues have been put on the back burner for so many years, and with women involved at a highest level, you know, brings their issues to the table as well.
Issues like healthcare and gender-based violence have been front and center as the candidates court female voters, encouraging them to make their voices heard at the polls on October 10th. Monique John, reporting for VOA News from Monrovia.
Here's a recap of today's top stories with South Sudan in Focus editor Carol Van Dam.
Thanks, Ayan. The International Committee of the Red Cross, or ICRC, is worried about the fate of dozens of people that were wounded in fighting around Watt this week. Fighting between government forces and rebels loyal to Riek Machar erupted on Sunday. An ICRC spokesman says his team earlier evacuated more than 20 injured soldiers and civilians to Okobo and Juba for medical treatment. ICRC spokesman Robin Waudo released a statement today accusing both warring parties of blocking the evacuation of wounded soldiers in the latest round of fighting. Waudo says warring parties must end the fighting now so the ICRC can airlift wounded soldiers out of the area. The ICRC was able to evacuate the 22 people wounded since the fighting broke out in the early days. He says government soldiers and rebels are blocking the ICRC after each day on the battlefield. He would not disclose the number of wounded from both sides trapped in Watt. SPLA military spokesman Brigadier General Lul Roy Kwong says the rebels are denying access to Watt. Colonel Lam Paul Gabriel, the deputy spokesman of the SPLA IO, says the fighting continues, so the area is not safe for any humanitarian organization. Some residents of Juba Town are calling on security forces to do more to end criminal activity in the capital of Juba, including killings and armed robberies, especially at night. A new report by the local NGO South Sudanese Network for Democracy and Elections, or SUNDA, says security agents are not doing enough to fight rampant crime in those neighborhoods. SUNDA Executive Director Rajab Muhandas presented 16 recommendations to the South Sudan Minister of Interior during a workshop today that was attended by representatives from organized forces, residents, and activists. SUNDA recommends establishing a line of communication to inform citizens on measures that are being taken by security personnel, as well as guarantees that safety and security will improve soon in Juba. Muhanda says residents are fed up with the lack of response from security forces during distress calls. Muhanda says residents want police and not security forces to answer those distress calls. And finally, today is International Teachers' Day, and some teachers in South Sudan's capital say even though working conditions are terrible, they are determined to continue teaching. Teachers in Juba say they love their profession, but because they get to prepare the next generation for higher learning, but they want those conditions to improve. In South Sudan, most primary teachers are paid between £380 and £1,800 per month. That's about $18. Secondary school teachers receive between 1,000 to 1,300 South Sudanese pounds, or about $10 per month. Aloro Cypress has been teaching for 11 years in Juba. He started as a primary teacher and is now a secondary teacher at Rainbow Senior Secondary School. He says he will continue teaching because he believes the future of South Sudan depends on the young generation that are in school. And that's a look at some of today's top stories. I'm Carol Van Dam.
Thank you, Carol. And that's our show for this Thursday. We leave you with the song Don't Say No by Dynamic.
You're the number one in my life, the only girl that I want. I wish I could caress, I wish I could kiss you, heal all the pain that you got, 'cause you hit me.
We've been listening to Dynamic with the song Don't Say No. I'm Ayan Bior in Washington. Thanks for listening. We'd like to hear your input on the show. You can check us out on the web at southsudan@voanews.com, or you can find us on our Facebook site at South Sudan in Focus. We hope to see you back here tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. I really wanna touch you.
life is like I'm upside down.